Yeah, given like the current situation worldwide, but especially focusing in on Mexico, I've seen in recent weeks there's been reports that this kind of COVID thing has hit that area quite hard. As you were saying, it's only like a tiny little blip really, isn't it? Mezcal production. And do you think that this whole situation might run the risk of really impacting the industry quite heavily?
Mezcal has been growing significantly for the last almost decade now. We're up to, I think it's over 6 million liters this year, which 6, 7 years ago was only 1 million liters. So it's had incredible growth. But a lot of its growth has been led by on-trade sales. Retail sales aren't usually that high, especially in this country, for mezcal, but a lot of it's sold in bars. So that's going to have a massive effect on the numbers this year of what they do. And we'll just have to see how that affects them. A lot of talk in mezcal circles is using it as time to consolidate and regroup and think about, are we growing in the best way? So something interesting could come out of that. But as you say, COVID has spread, unfortunately, quite heavily across Mexico. They had quite a different approach than European countries, I guess. They didn't really do any sort of lockdown. The president there just basically said, there's no chance of enforcing it, so we're not kind of going to bother. Testing hasn't been so high as well, so we're not really too sure of the extent of it there. The unfortunate thing is there's a lot of like rural communities that may be spared it because it doesn't reach there, but also that means it could take a long time and take a long time to work its way through Mexico. So the impact could be pretty big. In terms of how it's affected in terms of deaths of in those regions, I'm not too sure. So.
Yeah, all in all, it's not been ideal,
Right.
to put it kindly. So, in terms of your job now, then, how is it really? I mean, obviously, I know you're locked down at the moment, but once we come out of this, how do you think it will kind of like reshape your job role and what you're required to do? Or do you think that you'll kind of jump back into things as it was?
That's for sure. A lot of it depends on the trade and how the trade manages to reopen. Whether as people who work for brands are going to do things more remotely, that's still yet to be seen. I think I'm going to be on trains quite a lot less, so means I'll be either driving more or doing more kind of meetings over the phone, over Zoom. Hopefully, we've kind of realize that we can do a lot more online and over the phone than face to face. So it means we all have to travel less, which in the end is good for the environment. It's good for a lot of people not to have to rush around so much as well. Although you can't really beat a face to face meeting or face to face training session. It does feel a lot more real. I guess none of us really know the long-term implications. One thing that we were really worried about was the impact on the trade and whether people would want to go into city centres, especially if they're avoiding public transport. But by the past few days in retail, you can see that there's not really been people put off going into city centres. But there again, they've probably driven in and they're not drinking. Will people, want to resume public transport very immediately when the trade does reopen? We just have to wait and see what happens.
I know we're certainly at least looking forward to going back, but very unsure as to how busy it's going to be, I think.
It's just going to be a very different thing for a while. I think on top of having to shake off the rust of just not being behind the bar for a while, it's going to be kind of getting used to these new procedures and practices that are in place. So I don't think it will feel kind of like what we remember as bartending, at least in the short term, and I think inevitably that will mean we probably see less in sales, because I think that culture, I mean, I don't know what it's like in other countries in comparison to the UK, but we're quite renowned for sort of like the binge culture, you know, and there'll be a lot of, you know, we'll get in large groups. A lot of people will go and have a lot of drinks together. If it's, you know, a lot of table service implemented, it means that people only have like set times they can be in a bar, because they'll, you know, book a table out for 90 minutes or whatever. Then it means that you're probably not going to be in larger groups, you know, and I just think like socially, you kind of, it almost encourages you to take it a bit easier. You know, if you're only in a maximum group of say 3 or 4 people, you're not in a group of like 12, you're not getting rounds in, you know, and things like that. And obviously on one side of the coin, that's quite a positive thing, really. It kind of encourages and promotes a kind of healthier drinking culture. And for the kind of style of service that we go for in Smugglers, where we work, is the, you know, we want a more relaxed atmosphere, and we take time over the drinks that we make, and want people to like and enjoy and appreciate and savor them a little bit. It's not really about just, you know, necking some drinks and getting on with the night. But that element of the hustle and bustle, you know, and the atmosphere, it's always nice to be in a full bar. It's always a little bit odd to be in a bar like during the day when it's quiet or it's not open yet, you know, and I feel like it's just going to be a very big shift in that kind of style of things.
You know, yeah, definitely I agree with you. If it's, it will be a positive if we do go more in the direction of a kind of a continental style drinking, where, you know, it's not just all done within a few hours on Friday, Saturday night. My second bar that I worked in, went to work for Jake Berger at Jake's Bar in the early days of that, back on in Cool Lane of Leeds. And 3, 4, 5 deep at the bar on a Friday, Saturday night with everyone like that. I can't foresee us ever really returning to that.
It feels surreal now, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, I've kind of found myself a few times thinking, I don't understand how we ever did certain things that we would do and didn't think about the consequences. I think now this whole situation will kind of put into everyone a sort of thought of, like, I don't know, the interaction with people, you know, and kind of like germ spreading and things like that. People, of course, have always been aware you need to be hygienic and whatnot, and especially working behind a bar or around food, you know, that level is upped a lot. But this idea of just being out in public spaces, just like boxed in with loads of people, it just seems like a kind of surreal idea now. And I'm wondering whether we'll ever return to that and all this will just be forgotten about, or it'll kind of like be in the psyche now, you know, socially.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, whether that's commercially viable, because, you know, most places take the vast majority of the money on a Friday, Saturday night when they're packed. But if, you know, places are limited in bars, is that going to spread business to other nights? You know, God, we can't get anywhere on Friday, Saturday. We'll have to go out on Wednesday or Thursday and have this allotted time. You know, if that can spread the business out throughout the week, that would be great, because there's so many bars where I'd walk into on a, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday evening and think, God, how are you guys open? How are you making money? And especially over the last 10 years, there's been more of a movement outside of London to the weeknights being pretty dead. So in city centres. So yeah, we'll see the impact on that as well. There's a general move away from heavy binge drinking anyway, as people are getting more interested in healthy lifestyles and things. So
maybe. I'd say even in the last few years, we've seen quite a big focus on that. And I think one thing that I've really enjoyed seeing is the promotion within the industry itself, whether it be kind of like the mental health aspect side of things or, you know, the drinking side of things. A lot more people are trying to promote kind of healthier work-life balance, healthier drinking habits, and then obviously mental health as well. It's, you know, it can be quite a high stress job. You are dealing with a lot of people. There are lots of ups and downs, not necessarily in the same way that there are in like the corporate world or whatever, but you know, it's a lot of face-to-face interaction and it's quite hands-on. You know, it's tough, just like anything out there. It's tough, isn't it? And there's been a lot of promotion of healthy habits, which is quite a good movement. Can't really see any fault in that. Non-alcoholic beers, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get on board with those two. I totally understand why they're a thing, you know, but I don't really get it. I mean, I guess as well, though, that comes from my biased perspective of, like, when it comes to rum, you know, if something's got the ABV a bit more cranked up, tends to be a bit more for my palate. Same with beers as well. You know, if you're getting onto, like, the kind of darker styles, a bit heavier ABV-wise, it tends just to sit with me a bit better. So when I'm trying stuff that's quite light or, yeah, non-alcoholic beer, I don't know. I struggle with it a little bit, but I totally get why it's a thing and why it's gaining popularity, you know.
Yeah, but generally there's options there for people now if they do choose to have them, which is good. And I feel, yeah, the industry, the culture within the industry has changed a lot as well. When I first started, it wasn't uncommon to come across reps of the older generation who, I know a few of them, who would go and have a pint in every place they visited. And there was this one guy who was a bit notorious. He'd visit 10 places in the day and still drive, which is mental by today's standard. But I was mainly working in London in those years, and there was there'd barely be a day go by that I couldn't get away with not having a shot somewhere, because it'd literally be forced on you. You'd be like, if you refused it, you know, you would be just absolutely slaughtered. I remember hiding shots behind menus and stuff like that after a while, because it had been just incessant. But nowadays you can just easily say, you know, if someone offers you a shot, I'm okay, thanks, I'm not drinking too much today, and get away with it. So yeah, the culture's changing, which is good.
Looking back on your... No, go on, Andy, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think part of it is down to people just are a bit more interested and care a little bit more about what they're actually drinking fundamentally? So they'd rather spend a little bit more money on something that they're probably going to enjoy a lot more instead of spending loads of money on really cheap to get themselves hammered.
There has been that movement, definitely. If you look at the sort of the 1990s Alka-Pops and all that sort of stuff that was all about and hard ciders, drinking as much as possible for as cheap as possible, it has gone in the opposite direction of that, which is great. And this whole idea of drink less but drink better does seem to have been getting through. I'm all for that.
I was just going to say, kind of from some of the bars that you've mentioned and places that you've bartended in, it sounds like you've hopped around quite a lot of the country. So you've experienced a lot of different cities and what it's kind of been like, you know, working in different environments with different people.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, is there anything you really miss? Is there anything that you're kind of glad now that you don't have to do anymore? Barring the obvious, of course, you know, the breakdowns and cleaning up and whatnot. is there anything that you really enjoyed that you just... you're only ever going to find in bartending? And also, is there anything that you really are so glad that you just don't have to deal with anymore?
I was always one, I could really, really enjoy a nice quiet night where you would get to speak to people and give really, really good level of service, you know, a really nice, have everything, the ambience, the lighting all set, given that high level of table service and really getting time to talk to people about the drinks. That was the main style of bartending that I was all about. But there again, like rocking out a Friday, Saturday night shift with the music blaring and just having a great time was also a lot of fun as well. And I think I missed both of those sides of bartending. Mm. But I just don't think I've got the stamina for it anymore. But
I don't think we have either.
If anybody said they miss breakdown and they miss a setup shift, someone get them to a shrink. Like,
I don't know. There's something is there not something quite satisfying like seeing the bar all nice and clean at the end of an evening?
Or there is. Like, or that smell of mint when you're picking it. And
Or like 5 minutes before service when everything's done and you're like, yeah, this looks great.
No, I never did that.
It ready was for like, what?
Maybe 20 minutes after you started.
Did you find kind of your transition from working behind the bars to getting into some of the roles that you're doing now, was that a conscious effort? Did you kind of ever turn around and think, I'm kind of like, I'm done with like some of these really late nights now and I'm kind of a bit bored with the bartending, I want to move on? Or was it more of a natural progression where you were just going to tastings and trainings and you started meeting people and doing comps? Was there any kind of clear pathway you followed, or did it just happen?
I would say it just kind of fell together. I was definitely ready to have less late nights. It was that side of it more than actually not enjoying working behind the bar. I love working behind the bar, but it was the lifestyle that has taken its toll more. And then just when the opportunity came up, especially when back in those days, so this is the end of 2007, I didn't really know so many people with those roles, or didn't really know that was an option until it kind of really came up. And I was like, what, this is a job? People get paid to do this? And jumped on it, really. But I was relocated at that point from Leeds to London. So that transition was quite a challenge, because I was obviously going into the premier sort of kind of city of bartending.
I was going to say, that seems like it'd be quite a jarring move, and quite a big readjustment. I mean, even just the prospect, you know, kind of living up in the north, and basically, where, I mean, I'm in Liverpool now, but where I come from is smack bang in the middle of Leeds and Manchester. You get a train from one to the other, and the stop that's like right in the centre. So when I was like 18, 19, it was either nights out in Leeds or Manchester. So I'm quite familiar with both those scenes, or I was back then. And then now, obviously, I'm based in Liverpool. But having been to London a bunch of times, for one, there's obviously a lot more variety just because there's a lot more space and a lot more people and opportunity to do stuff. But I'd say, yeah, kind of certainly some of the higher end bars, that extra additional expectation, because there's a lot of money that can be spent, you know, and there's almost kind of like it's deemed as being one of the hubs of hospitality, really, isn't it? So the standards are so high. Every new place that's popping up is supposedly going to be taking it to the next level. So, yeah, how did you find that move, and how did that come about?
It was daunting at first, especially, you know, there's a lot of big names, quite a lot of big egos and stuff, and you're coming in as an outsider. But it took me very, you know, not long at all to realise that most people there were outsiders. So most people that came from other bar scenes or other countries or other cities. Even those big names, you know, they're generally nice people most of the time. So once you kind of get over that and talk, and it didn't, luckily I got some good help from some people down there, and fell on my feet a little bit there, so I was fortunate. But this was also before proper smartphones with map functions, so I'd like get off out of a tube station that I've never been to with an A to Z, looking up at the sky to see where the sun was, to try and work out which direction.
Hold the finger to the wind.
Licking the moss on the trees to see which
direction. I'll tell you what, is it like city maps or city macro or something? That's like a lifesaver.
Yeah. We had BlackBerries in that day for work, which, if everybody remembers what the Black... Do they even still exist? I'm not too sure. But... it didn't even have like a proper screen to display a map on or whatnot. So, yeah.
Do you have any kind of favourite bars these days? If you ever are in like London, is there any particular places that are always a go-to, or do you like to sort of experiment quite a lot every time you're out and try new places?
Well, there's always classic bars that you'll always like to go back to for different reasons, and I like to feel... Well, I guess with music, I like to feel that I can appreciate all genres, and I try and appreciate everything in its own terms, and I try and do that with bars as well. So whether it's the Savoy or, you know, Crowbar, like dive bars or whatnot, I like to appreciate those venues for what they are. And I think there's a common thread of people who, you know, of things that are done in the way they should be done, and done well. But there's always new places to see all the time down there. That's one of the things that's so crazy. So most of the time when I go down there now, it's checking out this new bar that's opened. But just so much choice. I don't get to spend enough time there nowadays to get around it all. But
there was certainly it was a big thing on our to-do list this year. There was more and more, certainly in Rum, there's these bigger dates coming up. There's more events, and they seem to be getting bigger and better every year. More things showcase, more variety, and inevitably there's a few stops in London and that kind of mix of stuff. So we were certainly going to try and get down there a little bit more, spend some time and meet some people. And of course the whole COVID thing just kind of pulled the rug from under us. But yeah, hopefully once everything settles down, we'll be able to kind of like crack back on with that, you know, and check out some stuff down there. Cause it's always exciting to see. One of the positives, I guess, of social media is the fact that you still do get some snippets and insights into what's going on, and it always seems like there's some exciting stuff. But at the same time, you know, even the likes of like Manchester and Liverpool, there's really interesting things kind of popping off in the bar scene all the time. Yeah, and
there's been some great new things in the northern bar scene generally coming in the last couple of years. Hopefully we'll see, you know, especially some of the newer venues that only opened within the last sort of 6 months to a year, be able to survive this and we'll see them reopen after.
A very positive spin on it, I guess, is that, you know, once all this kind of blows over, people will kind of realize what we had, and it'll almost like breathe a bit of new life into everything, you know, and people will be like really happy to get back to it. People be wanting to kind of like push the boundaries a little bit, or really go for it in terms of maybe opening up somewhere if they get the opportunity to do it, or branching out. And then likewise with consumers, hopefully they're thinking, you know what, it's nice just to be out and about, let's get out there and try some new places and appreciate what there is. Not been able to for so long.
You don't really appreciate what you've got until it's gone, and hopefully we do have that bounce back from it that when this is over.
Definitely Is there anything in the future you're kind of wanting to do? Do you have any aspirations in regards to where you'd like to see your career go from this point? You know, obviously I don't know,
it's one of those difficult things, because there's no real sort of career path, like trodden career pathway, that, you know, this happens after this amount of time in this industry, or maybe more with the bigger companies. And the trouble is now there's quite a lot of people doing it for the amount of, you know, jobs to go to. And there's also that aspect of a bit like being a bar manager and not getting to bartend anymore. With reps, you know, if we go and end up running the business that we work for, we don't actually get to do the bit of the job that we love, which is generally talking to people about booze. It's then just becomes more sort of, you know, business management and stuff. So there is a lot of people, even who you would consider to have, you know, a big career or whatnot, thinking, you know, what do I want to do when I grow up? I'm still not really entirely sure. I just kind of, you know, bumble through a little bit. Writing's always been an interest of mine though. So whether I start doing more of that, whether that will still be relevant in the future, or whether, you know, there is so many people reading books as there are learning off online resources. So education's always going to come into a major part of it, though. That's the bit of the job that I enjoy most. I love learning about booze myself, and I love passing that on to people. So whatever happens, I think that's going to play a big role in it. So
yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, I don't know if there's ever anyone in this industry that kind of has a sort of like clear rungs of the ladder kind of set up in which they, I mean, of course, you know, if you're working in a bar, you can maybe move up from being a bartender to being a head bartender to bar manager or whatever. But it feels like there's a lot of just like shifting across from position to position, rather than like kind of moving like quote unquote up, if you will, you know. And I figured it'd be the same for someone in your position. Sure, you can move from distributor to distributor, or, you know, working for certain brands and whatnot, but it's kind of very hard to sort of, I guess, figure out some sort of like clear path forward or up, if you will, because it's just
But there again, you know, this is all I had the opportunity to go to Japan a few years ago. Obviously, we look after Nikkei Japanese whiskey, but I went out there for a whole day myself, and it was interesting to compare their culture next to sort of Western culture. That I think we're very obsessed with what we're going to do next and how we're going to work our way up, and this sort of constant need to get yourself into a position you know, that you see is better. Whereas the Japanese approach is more to be able to do what you do better. I went into a sushi bar there, and one of the sort of really nice ones in Tokyo, and I saw this guy who looked really old chopping fish, and he must have been in his mid-60s, and I asked the waiter, is that the sushi master, you know, the main person? And just as I was asking, even older guy came out, and he was in his mid-80s, and it's like, no, he's just the apprentice. That's the sushi master. You know, this guy had worked there over 40 years, wow, and he was still the apprentice, and happy with that, and happy to, you know, really focus on progressing his craft rather than trying to progress up this ladder. You know, I think there's definitely value in kind of focusing more on doing what you do well rather than just trying to do the next thing. There's also a theory over here that, you know, a lot of people end up doing the job that they're not quite able to do because they've worked their way up to this point and done a job really, really well, and then get into the position above, which they're not really suited for. And then they never do that as well as what they were good at doing before. So I guess it's just balancing that, approach with our culture, because it is really difficult to get away with that feeling of needing of progressing all the time. And this recognition of having a higher job role. But
I guess that's kind of like the same concept as the I don't know what the exact phrase is, but it's kind of like, it's all about the journey and not the destination kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think far too many people sort of spend too much time looking into the future, and if they focused on the now and kind of, as you say, sort of worked on developing yourself and developing your craft, you'd end up gaining a lot more satisfaction doing that rather than, you know, finally getting to a point you thought you wanted to be at and then realizing that you've just kind of like coasted through the whole journey up to that point and not really actually learn anything valuable from it.
I think like I've certainly, like I used to have like an operations role or whatever, and it's, I've certainly had way more fun probably being back on the bar in Smugglers, 100%. You know, and we kind of have that kind of creative freedom to do what we want and write cocktail menus and stuff like that, and, you know, get what rums in we want to drink and stuff like that. So it's certainly, for me, it's been a lot more interesting, like kind of taking a step back almost and kind of just doing what you enjoy doing a bit more.
I bet you've tasted some much better room since you since you were doing that last operations role.
Hopefully it's gonna be good when we get back. We'll get some more new interesting things in, I think. Why not?
Nice.
Yeah, why not? there was something I was going to ask you about. Actually, I've recently done my WSET level 2, and I'm aware that you've done the 3.
Yep.
And I presume it's the spirits one, right? It's not the wine side of things.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask kind of like how that was as an experience, and, you know, obviously I'm sure you'd recommend it. Like, what was it like?
Yeah, pretty intense. Level 2 or doing level 3 is a great opportunity. Learn a lot. The level 3 is quite a big jump in terms of the information there and also the way that you test it as well. I believe level 2 is just the multiple choice questions. But in level 3, you have to do written examination and a blind taste test as well. Yeah, quite difficult. It's a 5-day course with then the test after that. And yeah, I was part of the first group that did it in the UK, which was back in October. And yeah, had an awesome time doing it. And managed to get myself a distinction, which I was really, really happy with as well. I kind of walked into it thinking that it would be great to get this qualification, but I'm probably not going to learn much, having spent all this time working for, you know, in the spirits industry. But it's amazing the amount of stuff that I realized that I hadn't really looked too much into over the way. Asian spirits in particular, like it covers Asian spirits of Baijiu and Soju very, very thoroughly, and I've never really looked into those things before.
I was going to say, I'm just about familiar with the names. That's about as far as my knowledge goes in that those sort of categories. So,
yeah, I was surprised by how much they went into it, actually. They really went into town on it. But I think it's because they've got to deliver this globally. So they've got to be fair to all regions of the world. So, you know, they've got to give a good amount of time to those categories. But it's really interesting. And I tasted some fantastic stuff from over there that way. So it definitely broadened my horizons. And also got me to think about really how to explain something more specifically and not kind of say stuff in a way that's actually factually correct, even though sometimes we say stuff that's correct, but we don't really put it in the right way or explain it that very clearly. So, I think it's really good at doing that as well. So, yeah, I advise everyone, whether you're, you know, behind the bar or whether working for a brand, that it's definitely a good
thing
to do.
Well,
I'm actually considering doing a wine one now. I've always just been an enthusiastic amateur when it comes to wine. I've never worked in the wine world, but I'm just kind of interested. I've got to the point where I do want to just at least have the vocabulary and the experience of the wine world when approaching spirits. So that is one thing that I'm considering in this downtime to like start doing my WSET in wine. So.
Yeah, that was one thing I found quite useful with the level two. As you said, that was just a multiple choice. You do tastings during it, and they kind of introduce you to the framework in how you should kind of like, you know, judge something when you're drinking it, whether it be, you know, well, you know, just all elements of the process. I'm not necessarily an advocate of sticking to a rigid structure every single time you try everything.
But as you say,
it kind of like starts just to sort of give you the vocabulary and some kind of like foundational points to just sort of anchor you in. And then from there, you can fill it in with your own experience and, you know, that and that kind of thing. The problem with, as you were just saying before, the problem of like explaining stuff, I come across that basically every time we do one of these videos. So I often find myself tripping over my own words and just getting lost when I'm saying stuff. So doing any kind of training in that department, I'm sure would do me some good.
It's crazy. Like, so I was doing very regular training sessions before the lockdown. You know, at least probably a couple per week on different subjects. I found that it's just it does come back to you being able to talk and structure. You know what you're really trying to say, but it's amazing how quickly you get out of practice. Which is a really good idea for you guys doing this, actually. You know, when you go for a week with only having like sort of basic conversations with people, so actually then, you know, feel like you're presenting again. It takes some adjustment.
We're just trying to keep everything fresh in our heads before we go back. Otherwise, it won't be gone. We're like, what room's that again? I kind of just wanted to ask, is there anything you actually wanted to ask us, Tom, that you've never maybe got around to asking us before or are curious about or anything like that?
On what subject? Is this just open to anything?
Spirits, beer, wine, whatever you fancy.
I don't know. You asked me the question that was quite interested where I see myself going and this. How about yourselves? To throw that question back at you.
I'll let you go first, Jack.
I was pausing waiting for you. to be honest, I think it's all just going to start with seeing how things shape up once we kind of emerge from the other side of this whole situation at the moment, you know. I'm very similar to you in the sense that don't get me wrong, I love a really, really busy shift, music blaring, good team by your side, you know, but I would say that I derive the most enjoyment from that kind of more personal service, that higher level interaction, you know. Likewise, I really enjoy hosting sessions, tasting sessions, kind of introducing people to the category and also attending them myself and kind of learning new stuff, you know. Like the W set, the level two was fascinating to kind of start opening doors to different categories and meet some people along the way and whatnot. So I imagine any kind of route that I decided to kind of take would entail more of that kind of thing. You know, I'd definitely like to travel some more, go to some of these places and actually see things happening at the base, you know. And then just kind of like to hopefully take that knowledge and spread it round a little bit. Of course, rum is kind of like something that both myself and Andy are really passionate about at the moment. There's nothing to say that I couldn't pick up, like you did with the, you know, with the Mezcal story. There was just that game changer, right? All it takes is that one sip of something to completely change your opinion and your outlook on stuff. So I'm hoping that there's still going to be plenty of those experiences coming our way in one form or the other in the future. But yeah, no idea really. Right now, the practicalities of kind of just being behind the bar and being in that environment is definitely the thing that I really enjoy. As long as I'm enjoying going to work, I don't really feel like I'm working too much, which is nice. Obviously, this whole thing might change that a little bit if it feels a bit more regimented and serious. Of course, I'm hoping that none of it will be long-term, but I'm also quite impatient. So if it's like 6-12 months and it's still slowly just coming back, I'll already be itching to try and like find some new things to interest me and do. Still within hospitality, of course, I'm sure. But yeah, just spirits on the whole, and you know, the cocktail side of things, still very much the forefront of what I'm interested in. So as long as I'm finding it fun and interesting, then it doesn't feel like you have to do a hard day's work, you know. So that's the aim for now.
Hopefully this won't hit our ability to travel too much long term. Is one of the biggest joys of, you know, working in this industry, is to be able to travel anywhere in the world and find, you know, like-minded individuals behind the bar or go and see producers, which is always an amazing experience to go and get, you know, just that understanding of what they're doing and why these liquids taste like they taste. You know, from that contact with the producers and the environments they're made in. So fingers crossed that we'll be able to do that again.
Yeah. Like in the last few years, I've not really necessarily gone on like really big holidays. I've not thought, right, I'm going to kind of like save for a while and then go away for 2 weeks. I've kind of done more city breaks and just kind of gone away for like, you know, 3 nights or so, gone to like Prague, Amsterdam, Barcelona, had Copenhagen sort of like in the works before all this happened. So I've really found it's been quite nice to kind of like just get little snippets of culture, you know, it's not really traveling that far afield, really going to any of those places I just mentioned, but culturally they're all so different. So it's really cool to see like what the cuisine's like, what the bar scene's like and style of service, and kind of take all that information, obviously enjoy it while you're there, and then sort of like implement it, you know, when you come back. And so fingers crossed, more travel.
In terms of me, I suppose I don't really know where it's gonna
be. Any of us do, really.
We've been winging it for years.
Andy, you are the king of cowboy and stuff, so
thanks. I take that as a compliment. It's one of those things, like, I'm very much like, I think it sounds like a really boring answer now, but I'm very much, I think, like you two, where it's a case of I really just enjoy teaching people about things and maybe getting them to make a slightly better choice in what they're drinking, like, kind of going forward, I suppose. You know, like Jack said, like, doing these, like, rum masterclass that we do in work and stuff like that, it's really nice to kind of engage with people that maybe initially don't like something, and then you kind of convince them over a couple of hours that they actually really do.
That's definitely one of the most rewarding bits of doing tasting to consumers, is winning them over to something or helping them find something that they didn't think they liked or didn't know that they liked, and then will now be able to appreciate. So
it's nice, isn't it, when you know, when you see that flip, that switch, like flip, when someone sees something like a white spirit and you see them taste it, and then you kind of see on their face that it dawns on them that, like, oh, I've had the completely wrong idea about this the entire time. Or you'll be wrapping up in like a tasting session and you'll just see someone like taking a sneaky photo on the phone of like a bottle, and you're like, you okay? And they're like, I'm just taking a picture so I can find it later online or something. Yeah. Good job.
It's even like behind the bar, though, it's as simple as, you know, someone asking you for a drink but they're not really sure what they want, and you can kind of be like, well, what do you like, I'll make you this, whatever. Or even like, you know, asking for a rum, say like, across the bar where they're not really sure what they want, but they like, you know, these three things say, and it's kind of, it's really nice. It's kind of really rewarding to give them something that they've not had before that, you know, they're going to enjoy by their kind of taste anyway.
Yeah.
It's really kind of a nice thing. So other than that, I don't really know like where it's going to go, where it's going to take me, I suppose. It's,
I guess all we can do is do what we do well and see what comes up. I think that's always the best.
I see
people who have got like 5-year and 10-year plans, and I'd respect them for it, but it seems crazy.
What's
to
the
me.
Point in planning? They just plans go wrong, right?
Yeah. To go with the flow when you need to. So, like this whole situation, you know, that's you could have planned for this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think with something like those plans, I understand the concept of doing it, but I think in life it's so easy for stuff to get derailed.
Yeah.
And this is like a super prime example, very extreme, obviously, but like it's just too difficult to guess what's going to happen, isn't it? And I almost feel like in a lot of ways you can sort of set yourself up for disappointment by thinking like, I need to be chasing this goal and then this goal and then this goal, whereas you should be focusing, more on the here and now and figuring out how best to utilize your time while you've got it and while you're in it. And then hopefully if you're shooting for, you know, something that you know you're going to enjoy, whether you fall short or you manage to hit the mark, at least you've been shooting in the right direction. It's way better to do that than settle for something you're not going to enjoy at all, but you know, you manage to get there. So
yeah, so I guess it's all about keeping a balance. What's that saying? Life's the thing that happens when you make it during that time that you're making plans.
Yeah,
like you got to take time to appreciate it.
I think we've actually been really enjoying like kind of just doing these videos, I think, as well. It's certainly kept us a little bit sane during all this, really. And then kind of everyone we've had on so far is just like people that we kind of really enjoy just talking to anyway.
Everyone has such different perspectives, don't they? And kind of like experiences and opinions about stuff. And I guess from an outsider's perspective, people might not think that like people within hospitality necessarily like really articulate or interesting or introspective, but everyone, certainly people that really stick with it long term, they've got a lot of very valuable and solid input and really interesting life experiences and stuff. So it's nice to, and the idea behind these conversations, it wasn't necessarily focusing on specific brands or products or categories. It's kind of really more trying to hone in on the people behind the bars and behind the brands, because more often than not, the stories that are behind the scenes are the ones that are far more interesting, you know. So
I thought of another question. I was gonna just ask what's your favorite room or something like that, but then I started thinking like make it relevant to COVID and everything and the situation we're in. If you could have something to drink right now that you haven't got, what would it be?
Oh. Well, many, many things. Certainly, proper pint of Guinness is is probably near the top. In terms of
rum. We're only a few weeks away from that with Pub Gardens maybe reopening next month. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully I won't have to wait too long. Maybe we actually got some Hampton Great House between me and Jack. When was it? A couple of weeks ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
I really need a bottle of the overproof to kind of compare them side by side. And that's probably one of my... It's delicious anyway. Like, it's probably one of my favourite rums of all time. That, I think, yeah. Because it is just wonderful. Like, I don't know how they make that taste like that.
Yeah,
I'm very similar to Andy. I guess it'd be a nice pint and a little rum on the side. I guess it always with me, it's kind of more like the situation really adds to the kind of like enjoyment of something that I'm drinking. So typically if like me and Andy having a pint of Guinness, we'll have been doing menu development for like 10 hours, you know, and then we'll go out and we'll just be having a chat afterwards and a pint of Guinness. Same with like the post, you know, 14-hour Saturday rum just goes down so much nicer than if you just get up, you're in your pajamas for the fifth day straight watching, the third series or something on Netflix and you have a rum. It's not quite the same. But in terms of something to drink, you know what, if I could have like an endless supply of daiquiris that I didn't have to make, but they were made as if I'd done them, so they were right to, they were just to my taste, and obviously I'd switch up the rum from time to time, and then yeah, I mean Hampden, that's a banger, and then also we got some of the Worthy Park, the what's it referred to as, the kind of single estate reserve, you know.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, some really good.
We in work, we've got the higher ABV one, the 57. I think it was like a Velier, like 70.
Yeah, the Velier, Velier release of it. Yeah.
So that was one of my favourites. I really, really like the kind of like oily mouthfeel, you know, and of course the flavour's banging. This one that we have is the 40, is it 45 or 43%? I think it's 45, might be 46.
Yeah.
I think it's in that ballpark. The more that I've been drinking of that, initially when I tried it, don't get me wrong, I thought it was great, but it's kind of like, because I was comparing it to the other variant, and of course I like it because it's, you know, it's got that extra ABV kick, and it's got that mouthfeel. I was kind of like, oh, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about it. I don't think it's quite as good. And then the more that I drank of it, the more that I kind of thought of it in its own right.
Yeah, as its own product.
And that is an amazing sipper. And I just can't, I can't stop going back to that at the moment.
Yeah, they're really tasty bottlings and good value as well, like for the price that they come out at.
That's it. Yeah, I think it was £45 for that. For that variant, and it's just like unbelievably good value.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, well, send me your address and I'll send you both a little care package. So hopefully,
that's very kind.
Good work, Andy. Good work.
Yeah, that's, maybe we should do that every time. Like every time, just call them out on here.
Now you can tell them. Well, Tom sent me this. So.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that could be everyone's payment.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll see you in person sooner rather than later. Yeah, obviously once we open our doors again, the more the merrier. We're going to try and get people in and meet up and do some tasting sessions and get the ball rolling again when things are safe to do so, and you know, back to normality.
Yeah definitely. I look forward to coming back to the docks, having a taco around the corner at Madre, coming for a run with you guys, and that area's really coming together with some more things going on. So hopefully when it reopens, it'll be just as strong and to keep going in that direction. So
absolutely.
Yeah. We're starting to get loads of nice little kind of like independent restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is really good. Like kind of, it keeps people sort of really interested in like coming down and
drawing the people to that area. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even if they get food somewhere else, you know, they'll come in to Smugglers for a drink after, which is great. Yeah. You know, great for us.
Yeah, definitely. Come into the docks for their evening out rather than just a, you know, maybe heading over for one,
Yeah, exactly. Right, so I think that's pretty much covered everything, right?
Yeah, I think we've interrogated you enough for one day.
Yeah. So. Room, light,
thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
As always.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. Really, really enjoyed it.
I believe it's my outro, isn't it? So
go for it.
Obviously subscribe to this, hopefully watch it on YouTube. Again, we'll make the joke every time. We're not big enough to be pirated yet. So subscribe to the YouTube, it's obviously Just Run With It, or Instagram, which is Just Run With It. Follow Tom's Instagram, which is it just at Tom Bartram?
I think it's Tom M. Bartram or something like that. So
there you
I don't even know, I'm that old that I don't even know my contact.
Speciality have got a nice Instagram account going as well, don't they? They're constantly posting up new products, sexy and interesting photos, stuff in the industry.
Speciality brand. We have got more than one brand, but the plural of that was gone, so at Speciality brand.
I like how you know that one and not your own. For a company, man.
Yeah.
But that's I guess we'll see everyone next time.
Perfect.
Bye. Bye. Yeah.